This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
Picture this for a second, right? It's early November 2023. You're scrolling through this nondescript government website.
Right, the kind that's usually just dry administrative updates and, you know, zoning laws.
Exactly. And in this quiet office in Beijing, the Ministry of Industry and Information Technology, the MIIT, has just uploaded this brief document. It's exactly 9 pages long.
9 pages.
Yeah. If you printed it out, it wouldn't even warrant a staple. I mean, it looks like a completely forgettable bureaucratic memo. But those 9 pages were effectively the starter pistol for an industry that just rewired hundreds of billions of yuan in capital.
It really is a textbook example of how a centralized system uses just, you know, a handful of pages to dictate this massive physical shift in reality.
Right.
It's not just policy. It's an engineering schematic for an entire nation.
Okay, let's unpack this. Welcome to today's deep dive, everyone. We are looking at a massive nationwide blueprint today. Utilizing some incredible materials provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim, we're exploring exactly how China is deploying state capital, reacting to a deep demographic panic, and using aggressive top-down policies to attempt total dominance in the humanoid robot and embodied AI market.
It's a massive shift.
Is. And before we really get into the mechanics of how this works, just a quick note for you listening. Our sources today heavily touch on geopolitical tech wars, you know, sanctions, national rivalries.
Yeah, heavy stuff.
Right. But we aren't here to take a political side or pass judgment. We are simply unpacking the strategies, the hard numbers, and the on-the-ground reality of these documents to understand how this machine actually operates.
Exactly. We are looking strictly at the architecture of the strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And that architecture starts with those 9 pages from 2023.
Right. The memo.
Yeah. To understand how a memo mobilizes a whole country, you have to realize that it wasn't just setting goals, right? It was creating a shared vocabulary. The MIT document basically mandated that from that day forward, humanoid technology across the country would be split into 3 distinct categories.
Okay. What were they?
First, you have the brain, which refers to the AI foundation models.
Mm-hmm.
So how the robot perceives its environment, how it makes decisions.
The software, basically.
Right. Second is the cerebellum. This refers to the algorithms responsible for complex physical balance, walking, and movement.
Ah, like the motor controls.
Exactly. And finally, the limbs, which are the physical skeleton, the motors, the actuators, and, you know, the dexterous hands.
Brain, cerebellum, limbs. I mean, it takes this overwhelmingly complex engineering challenge and turns it into a highly digestible checklist.
It really does.
I can totally see why that matters. If you're like a robotics startup in Shenzhen trying to pitch a venture capitalist, or a mayor in Beijing evaluating who gets a subsidy, everyone is suddenly speaking the exact same language.
Yeah.
You aren't just building a robot anymore. You are optimizing the cerebellum.
Precisely. The state effectively rewrote the dictionary to align the capital markets with the engineering labs. But, and this is key, the document also set a timeline that at the time seemed genuinely absurd.
Oh, the 2025 goal.
Yeah. The first major milestone was targeting actual physical mass production of humanoid robots by the year 2025.
And this is where the contrast in our source materials just gets wild. When that 2025 target dropped, Western observers were, they were highly skeptical.
Very.
We have a 2024 report from the U.S.-China Economic and Security Review Commission, the USCC, and their assessment essentially concluded that mass production in this context probably just meant possessing the basic industrial capability to produce a robot eventually.
Right, like a theoretical capability.
Exactly. They assumed it was political posturing, not actual physical assembly lines, pumping out finished humanoid robots within 2 years.
It was largely treated as totally unrealistic.
Yeah.
But as we sit here looking at the landscape today in 2026, the hard data shows that the results have outpaced even the most generous skepticism.
Yeah, the numbers are crazy.
In 2025, global humanoid robot shipments hit somewhere between 13,000 and 18,000 units.
Which is a staggering leap on its own, considering humanoids were essentially just lab experiments a couple years prior.
It is. But the crucial metric for our deep dive today is that roughly 90% of those units came directly out of Chinese factories.
90%? Wow.
Yeah. You have companies like Ajibot hitting a milestone of 10,000 units rolling off the production line by March 2026. Another manufacturer, Unitree, shipped over 5,500 units in 2025 alone.
So the USCC's assumption was just incorrect.
Completely. The abstract goal of mass production became a quantifiable reality on the factory floor.
It makes me think about the smartphone in your pocket. For a long time, the concept of a smartphone was this clunky theoretical device that only existed in corporate R&D labs.
Right, like the old PDAs.
Exactly. And then almost overnight, the supply chain clicked into place, the unit economics made sense, and suddenly millions of them were just sliding down a conveyor belt. Mm. We are watching that exact transition happen with metal bodies and actuators right now.
It's the leap from theoretical engineering to cold, hard logistics.
Right. But if you're listening to this, you might be wondering why they are bothering with the metal bodies at all. I mean, if China wants to dominate AI, why not just focus on software like ChatGPT? Why pour billions into the messy, expensive world of bending metal?
Well, the answer is entirely driven by a deeply rooted demographic panic. If you look at the data in the sources provided by former lawmaker Kyungjin Kim, by 2024, China's population over the age of 60 had already soared to 21.1%.
That's a massive chunk of the population.
It is. They have fully crossed the threshold into a rapidly aging society. But more importantly, their working age population is shrinking by millions every single year.
So the actual human workforce that sustains the world's factory is rapidly aging out of the labor pool?
Exactly. And traditional fixed robotic arms, the kind that weld car chassis together, they can only do so much. A fixed arm can't walk across a messy warehouse to fetch a custom part, and it certainly can't navigate a home to provide elder care.
Right, they need mobility, they need adaptability.
Which means the Chinese government does not view humanoid robots through the Western lens of, you know, job stealers.
Oh, interesting.
They view them as desperately needed digital workers. They're seen as a biological necessity to prevent a total collapse of their manufacturing dominance by 2030.
That reframes the whole strategy. It totally explains why they elevated this technology to the highest possible level of state planning. If you look at the 15th five-year plan, which runs from 2026 to 2030 and was officially approved in March 2026, they placed embodied AI at the absolute peak of what they call their new productive forces strategy.
Right. A new productive forces is the state's acknowledgement that the old model relying on endless cheap labor and massive real estate development is just dead.
Yeah, that well has run dry.
Exactly. They need to transition to total factor productivity driven by advanced technology. And when Beijing signals a priority that massive, it triggers a frenzy at the local level. Local governments, who are desperate for new streams of economic revenue, began forming massive investment funds to attract startups.
This is what the sources call the 100 billion yuan club, right?
That's the one.
Cities are practically tripping over each other, throwing unbelievable amounts of money to lure the best engineering talent. And Beijing's specific approach to this is fascinating because they utilize something called patient capital.
Which is so rare in tech.
It really is. They created 15-year investment funds. And if you know anything about traditional venture capital, a 15-year timeline is practically an eternity. Mm-hmm. Most VCs want a massive return on their investment in, what, 3 to 5 years?
Yeah, usually around there.
And that works for a software app that can scale infinitely overnight, but it is impossible for a hardware-heavy robotic startup that has to actually design, machine, and test physical parts.
Hardware is hard, as they say.
Exactly. 15 years completely removes that suffocating short-term pressure. There's this incredible story in our sources about a founder named Gao Jiyong. He was born in the 1990s, and his company, Star Era, set up shop in Beijing's Yuzhuang district to take advantage of this capital.
And look what happened.
Right. Within just over 2 years, they had a 10 billion yuan valuation.
That is the power of removing the ticking clock from hardware development. But you have to contrast Beijing's long-term financial play with the raw physical speed of Shenzhen's strategy. Shenzhen leaned into what they call the one-hour ecosystem.
I really want to dig into this because the mechanics of it are just mind-blowing. Imagine you are a robotics engineer working in Shenzhen. You wake up, and by 9 a.m., you've designed a completely new algorithmic model for a robotic knee joint on your computer.
Okay, pretty standard so far.
But then before lunch, you send those digital design files to a specialized machining factory in the neighboring city of Dongguan. By the afternoon, the factory has physically machined that knee joint out of metal.
Same day.
Same day. By the evening, it's assembled and put on a truck, and the very next morning, it is sitting on your desk in Shenzhen ready for physical testing.
It's unbelievable. The gap between a digital thought and a physical prototype is compressed to 24 hours. That supply chain density allows for an iteration speed that is practically impossible anywhere else in the world.
But a metal body, no matter how fast you build it, is useless without a brain. And this is where these startups hit a massive financial wall.
Ah, yes. the compute costs.
Right. The biggest hurdle isn't machining the metal. It is the astronomical cost of computing power. Mm-hmm. We are talking about millions of dollars in server time just to train an AI model on how a robot should balance while picking up a box.
It's insanely resource intensive.
So if these local governments want to help these startups survive this incredibly expensive valley of death, my question is, why not just hand them cash grants? Why do the sources detail this convoluted system of Zunliquan, which translates to computing vouchers?
What's fascinating here is that this is perhaps the most strategic, subtly genius maneuver in the entire blueprint.
Really? How so?
Well, utilizing notes from lawyer Kung-jin Kim, we can see that these computing vouchers are heavily restricted. For example, Shanghai issued 40 million yuan in compute vouchers and 5 million yuan in data vouchers. But the catch is that startups can mostly only redeem them at state-owned AI data centers.
So wait, the government gives you millions in free money, but you are forced to spend it at the government's own store.
Exactly. But the secondary layer is where the trap really snaps shut. Those state-owned data centers are operating under a strict national mandate. 80% of their hardware must be domestic Chinese chips.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. By forcing these cash-strapped robotic startups to use free vouchers to survive, the state is essentially forcing them to migrate their core AI code.
Which means moving off of NVIDIA's hardware.
Exactly.
And that is not a simple copy and paste job. We need to explain CUD here because it's totally vital. NVIDIA's software ecosystem is called CUA. It isn't just a basic program. It is a massive, decade-old library of pre-written mathematical shortcuts that AI developers rely on.
It's the gold standard.
It's the foundational language of modern AI development. Asking a startup to abandon CUDA and switch to Huawei's domestic software stack, which is known as Canon, is like asking a seasoned novelist to suddenly write their next book in a language they barely speak without a dictionary.
So it's a huge ask.
It takes massive engineering resources to rewrite that code. So these vouchers act as a golden handcuff.
A golden handcuff that brilliantly bypasses U.S. tech sanctions. Think about it. Every single time one of these startups redeems a voucher to train their robot's brain, they are running incredibly complex real-world workloads on domestic chips made by companies like Huawei or Cambricon.
Oh, I see.
All of that usage data, all of those edge cases and bugs feed straight back to the Chinese chip makers. It allows them to rapidly patch and improve their domestic hardware. The startups get their free computing to survive, and the state gets to crowdsource the battle testing of its sanctioned semiconductor industry.
They are turning hundreds of desperate robotic startups into an unpaid QA department for their domestic chip industry. That is wild.
It really is.
But if this entire strategy hinges on these vouchers being used at state data centers, what does that national infrastructure actually look like? Are we talking about like a few big server farms in a warehouse?
No. The scale is almost hard to comprehend. The National Development and Reform Commission, the NDRC, laid out a blueprint for a 2 trillion yuan investment.
2 trillion?
Yes. To put that in perspective, that is roughly 295 trillion Korean won. Deployed over 5 years, entirely dedicated to building a massive national AI data center network.
That is just a staggering amount of money.
And the key performance indicator of this network is speed. The goal is that by 2028, any major city will have a 1 millisecond latency connection to these computing hubs.
If you're wondering how fast 1 millisecond latency is, it is literally faster than human reflex. And that changes the fundamental architecture of the robot itself.
How so?
Think of it as a cyber-physical system. Historically, if you wanted a smart robot, you had to pack a heavy, incredibly expensive, heat-generating supercomputer right into its torso or head.
Right, which drains the battery immediately.
Exactly. It makes the robot heavy, expensive, and useless after an hour. But if you have a 1 millisecond latency connection to a 2 trillion yuan cloud, you don't need the supercomputer in the robot.
Exactly. You give the robot a relatively cheap physical body, basic sensors, and a powerful 5G or 6G connection. The state-owned cloud acts as the real brain, doing all the heavy computational thinking remotely, and it just puppets the cheap physical body in real time.
It completely revolutionizes the unit economics of building a robot. And because of that NDRC mandate you mentioned earlier, that 80% of this massive infrastructure must use domestic chips, the state has created guaranteed manufactured demand.
Right, a captive market.
Yeah, and that guaranteed demand allowed Huawei to launch its Ascend 950PR chip in April 2026 for just 70,000 yuan. That is roughly a third of the cost of NVIDIA's flagship H200 chip. This state-backed ecosystem has caused NVIDIA's market share in China to drop dramatically.
True. But we have to look at the physical limitations of this strategy, too.
Yeah, let's talk about the honest face of this.
The state can mandate demand and build data centers all day long, but manufacturing the microscopic silicon is still a profound bottleneck.
Yeah.
The sources from former lawmaker Kung Jin Kim are very clear about this. China's primary semiconductor foundry, SMIC, is really struggling. They are currently stuck at around a 20% yield on their advanced 7-nanometer chips.
We really need to break down why that yield is so low, because it's the direct result of sanctions. Think of manufacturing a 7-nanometer chip like trying to paint a microscopic masterpiece on a grain of sand.
I like that analogy.
To do that, you need a highly specialized, ultra-fine brush. In the semiconductor world, that brush is called EUV lithography equipment. But because of international sanctions, SMIC is banned from buying those EUV machines.
So they can't get the fine brush.
Right. So they have to use older, thicker brushes, a process called multi-patterning. It is incredibly difficult, slow, and error-prone. A 20% yield means that for every 10 chips they pull off the manufacturing line, 8 of them are defective and have to be thrown in the trash.
It is a wildly inefficient and staggeringly expensive way to build infrastructure. They are effectively brute-forcing the manufacturing process, absorbing massive financial losses just to keep the silicon flowing.
So the state is bleeding money to build the infrastructure, and the startups are burning millions trying to train their AI models. With costs this astronomical across the board, how are the actual robot companies surviving long enough to even build a product?
They are surviving because the state opened a fast-track lane directly into the public stock market.
Really?
Yeah, utilizing sources provided by lawyer Kung Jin Kim, we can see how the government weaponized the IPO process to inject public retail capital into these companies. The best example is Unitree. They applied for an IPO on the STAR Market, which is essentially China's equivalent of the NASDAQ, designed for high-tech companies.
Okay.
Their application was approved in a blistering 73 days in June 2026.
Anyone who follows finance knows that 73 days for an IPO approval is practically light speed. It usually takes several quarters, if not years, of audits and roadshows.
And when Unitree opened its books for the IPO, the numbers were just stunning. 1.7 billion yuan in 2025 revenue. And they actually demonstrated a functioning profit margin, which is incredibly rare for a hardware startup at this stage.
Unheard of, honestly.
Meanwhile, another major player, Engine AI, filed for a Hong Kong IPO, and their primary boast to investors was a manufacturing speed of one robot every 15 minutes.
One complex humanoid robot rolling off the line every 15 minutes. That is crazy. But hold on, I'm looking at this landscape. The state has pumped in endless capital, creating an environment with over 150 different robotics companies.
Yeah, it's crowded.
Because there are so many players desperate for market share, prices have absolutely crashed. Unitree's G1 model dropped to 99,000 yuan. I mean, that's cheaper than a lot of basic used cars. It is a bloodbath of price cutting. The sources referred to this phase using the term Nuan or involution.
Right, involution.
It's a hyper-competitive race to the bottom where everyone is suffocating each other.
Which leads to a fascinating contradiction in government policy. In late 2025, the NDRC publicly issued a stark warning about this exact scenario. They officially warned about massive overcapacity, pointing out that identical, low-quality robots were flooding the market and destroying value.
Wait, didn't the government engineer this exact environment? They handed out the subsidies, they opened the 15-year funds, they fast-tracked the IPOs, and then they complain about overcapacity? On the surface, that looks deeply hypocritical.
It does.
But wait, we've seen this exact movie before, haven't we? This isn't a mistake. This is the electric vehicle playbook all over again.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you nailed it. It is a highly deliberate Darwinian mechanism. The overcapacity is a feature, not a bug.
So they intentionally create the bubble. They flood the zone with cheap capital and patriotic fervor, knowing full well that out of those 150 companies, 147 of them are going to burn through their cash, slash their prices to zero, and go completely bankrupt.
Exactly. They want the brutal price wars. Because the pain of Nuan, that involution, forces companies to optimize their supply chains to a microscopic degree just to survive another week.
Wow.
The state knows most will die. But the two or three companies that actually survive this gauntlet won't just be survivors. They will emerge from the bloodbath as globally dominant national champions. They will hold massive cash reserves in the public markets, their AI algorithms will be battle-tested on domestic chips, and their manufacturing pipelines will have been optimized to the absolute physical limit.
So they basically build a massive arena, throw 150 well-funded gladiators inside, lock the doors, and wait to see who walks out alive.
That's one way to put it, yeah.
So the NDRC's warning in late 2025 wasn't them realizing they made a mistake. It was the state ringing the bell for the next phase of the fight. They were signaling the transition from the subsidize everyone phase to the consolidate and conquer phase.
It is ruthless. Huh. But looking at the data, it is undeniably effective at rapidly scaling new industries.
As we wrap up this deep dive into the materials, I really want you to step back and think about the sheer scale and aggressive speed of this top-down strategy.
That's dizzying.
In less than 3 years, they took a 9-page bureaucratic memo and turned it into a booming physical industry. They blended limitless state capital, absolute standard setting, and a forced march toward chip independence to create a reality where millions of cheap physical robots could soon be running on a 2 trillion yuan national cloud network. It is an industrial mobilization on a scale that is hard to fully grasp.
And this raises one final, highly provocative question. Let's assume this brutal strategy works perfectly. Let's say China succeeds in producing the hardware, the cloud brain, and establishing the global standards for millions of these cheap digital workers by 2030.
Okay, what then?
If they own the bodies and the brains of the robots sweeping floors, assembling cars, and caring for the elderly, who gets to write the moral and ethical algorithms that govern how these machines interact with human society on a daily basis?
Wow, if you own the factory in the cloud, you own the rules. That is a chilling but entirely necessary thought to leave off on. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the sources. And as always, keep questioning the rapid changes in the world around you. We'll catch you next time.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.